Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time, we're going to be talking about denial. Denial of problems, denial of mistakes, just denial, and how it affects whether or not we will reach our successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And how to recognize that you've got denial and do something about it so that it doesn't affect the successful outcome. And we have one. We have a successful outcome. So as we often do on this show, let's decide what we're talking about within our context. What is denial within our context of alternative dispute resolution, mediation, negotiation, a seminar perhaps, or a workshop even, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is that we are leading, usually we're the leader, that we need to reach consensus and a successful outcome. So what is denial within our context? Mm-hmm. We have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Let's see. We've got some agreement about what denial is. Annika and others are saying that denial within our context is refusal to accept responsibility for your own actions. Refusal to accept responsibility for your own actions. Yeah, I deny responsibility. I'm going to refuse to accept. Mm-hmm. Also, Khan and others say that it's refusal to accept the facts, not in favor of your preconceived notion. Yes. Now, refusal to accept facts, not in favor of preconceived notion. And we've talked about preconceived notions on this show. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've done an entire show on it. All the shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. In fact, we've never actually repeated a show, but sometimes people ask if we would discuss it again. I'm not going to put up the recording from before, but maybe we will have a preconceived notion one. We get a lot of requests for that one, and for several others too. We may. I don't usually repeat a show, but well, it's not going to be a repeat because we're going to say different things. We're going to have different questions. Mm-hmm. So refusal to accept the facts not in favor of a preconceived notion, which means that you've come with an idea, right? And you come and you know what the facts are, but they're not fitting anymore. You're denying it. Linda and others are saying that denial within our context is refusal to accept the consensus decision. Refusal to accept the consensus decision. Mm-hmm. We can, I think, have four areas that we're going to talk about, because I can see that that's what the answers are, and they're very good ones. The fourth one is going to be, Riley and others are saying, refusal to acknowledge potential consequences of your actions. Yes, and yes, I know a lot of you have actually said the exact same things, and yes, refusal to acknowledge the potential consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. Now that we've decided what denial is, within our context. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of water. My, there we go. Yes, it does show it's a live show, doesn't it? I'm kind of like, oh, I'm going to wander off for a second. Now that we've decided what denial is, and that's refusal within our context, refusal to accept responsibility for your own actions, refusal to accept facts, not in favor of a preconceived notion, refusal to accept the consensus decision and refusal to acknowledge potential consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. That's denial, right, within our context. In fact, these might be said to be true of the group, except for the one about facts, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's do it one at a time, because we are practical people on this show, and we like theory, and we like talking about stuff, but we like to do something about it, even more than just think on it, because theory is nice, but we live in the real world. So let's take the first one, refusal to accept responsibility for your own actions. That's denial, because you're refusing to accept responsibility. So what does that mean? What have we seen? Mm-hmm. And what should we do about it? We've got some consensus. Ian and others are saying that that usually happens when someone is incompetent, so they blame others or the team. Yeah, they're incompetent, so they blame others or the team. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what to do, and so they either didn't do it, they just ignored it, or they did it out any enthusiasm and wrong. They didn't care. They were incompetent, and they people are saying blew it off, which is, I think, an Americanism, and of course this is a global show, but they just didn't do it, or they did it haphazardly, or they just did it in any old way that they knew was going to be wrong, right? Yeah. So what should we do about that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What should we do about it when somebody is just plain ordinary being incompetent? Mm-hmm. This is a very good point. A lot of people are saying we should find out why. Yeah. That would be my first instinct, would be to find out why. And one of the ways that we keep track of, we need to keep some track of things, don't we, if we've made assignments, and have some what I call interim reports, have people kind of say what they're doing, mm-hmm. and keep an open mind and an open ear, and be open to questions and be open to people saying, I don't know what to do. And when someone says that to you, they need help. And so you get them help. You either tell them exactly what needs to be done, and give them more specific instructions. Some people need some hand-holding. Or you find someone who will know what to do and pair them up, right? Yeah, so that they're not incompetent anymore. Most people don't want to be incompetent. It just kind of happens, if you know what I mean. And therefore, they need to be able to ask questions without feeling stupid, without some sort of penalty. And they need to be able to ask for help, right? Yeah, because you don't want them to deny their responsibility because they're just plain ordinary, don't know what to do about it, right? Yeah. So, and then they blame someone else. No. That's unacceptable behavior. And if they're blaming someone else, then we get together with the someone else and find out what it is that's happening. Maybe we need to switch teams. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, maybe we need reassignment. Well, some people are saying, and I know that I tend not to, but some people say maybe we need to be removed and asked to leave if we're incompetent. Well, I've done it. It's not my first choice. But after we talk, after the questions are answered, after we've given specific instructions, you know, and some groups you have to dismiss the incompetent faster than others because they are preventing you from reaching a timely conclusion, successful outcome. So that is a judgment call on the leader. It's not my first choice, but I have indeed done it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Medell and others are saying that the leader needs to take responsibility for the process to go forward. Yeah. So you might indeed have to, well, tell someone who's truly incompetent and not getting better that they have to leave, that they can no longer be part. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much, but, you know, but go do something that's more you're more capable of. Mm-hmm. The leader needs to take responsibility for the process to go forward. And that's one of the responsibilities, is to control the group, control the group dynamic. Not to be like a dictator and tell them exactly what to do and when and like that. Some groups need that, most groups don't. But to make sure that we're all making progress, that we're all reaching towards consensus, that we all know what we're doing, and that we are headed towards our successful outcome. No matter how long it might take, the process has to keep going, right? If it bogs down, then we won't have a group dynamic. That's really the reason for it. It's not so that we can make rules or something. It's so that we need to push the group dynamic forward and people understand that it's a good group and we're getting somewhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's the leader's responsibility. I think it is. Mm-hmm. Drew and others are talking about the cover-up of problems, refusal to accept responsibility, denial of problems, cover-up of problems, instead of bringing them to the team to solve. Mm-hmm. Cover up problems instead of bringing them to the team to solve. We've got a problem. We've hit a roadblock. We don't know what to do. We're not really incompetent because we were chugging along before them. But now we're going to deny that we're in trouble because we don't want to admit it to the other people. But if we told that we had hit a dead end, then the team, the group, maybe the leader, could help us solve it and keep going forward. You see? But we're embarrassed. We have denial. We're going to pretend we haven't hit a problem, instead of bringing it to the group to solve. We're going to pretend we didn't notice we had a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is human nature. People are saying it's human nature to do stuff like that, and I suppose it is, which is why it is the leader's responsibility, our responsibility, to make it clear that questions are always welcome and that if you hit some sort of a snag, some sort of a dead end along the way, come and tell everybody because we're all in it together. Yeah. You may be the person sending the emails, making the phone calls, using your connections, but we're all in this together. And if what we discuss doesn't seem to be, your part doesn't seem to be working out, let's think on it. Let's get together and find a solution. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone else knows somebody in their network that could help. Yeah. But don't just ignore the problem and deny that it exists. I actually must say that I come right out, because I'm not fond of subtlety, I come right out and I say that to the group. Don't deny a problem. Don't pretend it doesn't exist. If you hit a snag, come and tell us. If I hit a snag, I'm going to come and tell you because I'm going to need help. I'm going to need the team input. I'm going to need somebody to, and even if you've promised something, you know, sometimes people promise that they will, for example, connect with someone that they know, and they can get that third party to do something to help us, right, with the third party, and they do their very best, but for some reason it doesn't work. The third party just won't, it says that they can't. For one reason or another. Come back and tell us that. Because we'll find someone else. We will attack the problem from a different angle. I tell everyone there's no shame in not being able to. There is only shame in denying the problem and not telling us so that we could all help solve. Yeah, I come right out and say it. I really do. When I make assignments, I say it more than once. And I look everyone in the eye very sincerely when I do it. And I mean it. We need to know, as the process progresses, what's going on. You can't just have denial. Yeah. So a cover-up of the problems, a pretending that they don't exist, You know, sometimes people convince themselves of that, that they don't, that the denial is so deep that they convince themselves that they don't have the problem. Yay, team. And Jen and others are talking about denial when you make a mistake and you don't admit it. Yeah. The refusal to accept responsibility for your own actions. You made a mistake. You're human. The thing is that you didn't admit it. And we all went forward, presumption that whatever the mistake was didn't happen because we didn't know about it. But it's foundational, and it's going to affect us down the line. Tell. People make mistakes. I mean, for heaven's sakes. It might be a mistake as to how much influence you have over somebody's decision. Well, that's a human mistake. It happens to the best of us. Tell. Yeah. Tell everybody. Tell the whole group. Tell the leader if you don't want to make a mistake. I tell this to people. I say I am open to be told anything I want to know. Mm-hmm. Even if you've made a mistake. Sometimes it's such a kind of embarrassing thing that a participant doesn't want to admit it to the group. Especially if there is a, I don't know how to put this nice, kind of a power structure in the group. I see this sometimes when I work with multinational corporations. And the people, the team members, right, we're a team. Team members are all supposed to be equal. That's the idea of the team. We work together as a whole. But in real life, when you leave the room and you leave the team, the participants in the team are not equal to each other. Some of them are more supervisory, more managerial, for example, and some of them are lower in level at the workplace, right? And the supervisory managerial people have some say over the others, and also they have peer pressure amongst each other. And if it's the supervisory managerial side that has made the mistake, they don't want to admit it to the, yeah, people call them the lower levels, but you know what I mean. That's kind of not very nice, but it's true. They don't want to admit it in front of their subordinates. And if a subordinate makes a mistake, they don't want to admit it in front of their superiors, right? Because in real life, when they leave the team, they're not equal. Therefore, I always say right out loud that you can tell me anything. I am open to, I will not repeat it. We will discuss it. We will see what needs to be done. And sometimes it is the leader who brings information anonymously or works it out without having to talk to the entire team. Yeah, for example, you've made a mistake and you don't know how to fix it. Maybe I can fix it. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can contact someone to fix it. And then we can all go forward. Really, yeah, as though it never happened. Yeah, that's kind of the idea, because it gets us back on track, and it doesn't really make any difference that we veered off first for a little while there, as long as no harm was done because you fessed up, you told the leader, and we got the whole thing back on track. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that a lot. I think it's one of the roles of being a good leader is to be able, people be able to confide in you that something's not working and they don't know what to do about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, if they don't want to, if it's not something that's open for discussion with the whole group. Some group, you know, it's different, the groups have different dynamics. Some groups, they all really are equal and they all really want to know and they all really want to work on it. Yeah. And sometimes not. You have to know that as a leader. You have to think about it. Mm-hmm. So what's our next area of denial? Because I'm looking at the time and going, oh, yeah, we're gonna miss the recipes again. The second area of denial that we talked about within our context is refusal to accept facts, not in favor of preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Refusal to accept facts. This is a very good point that a lot of you are saying. You know, sometimes one person's fact is another person's opinion. Think about that for a minute. One person's fact is another person's opinion. Mm-hmm. Not everybody agrees what the facts are. And sometimes you see someone, as Jung says, that insists that they are not facts, but merely opinions. Depends what kind of facts you're dealing with, right? Now, there comes a time when we have to agree on some base facts. And that's our next topic, is the refusal to accept consensus. But, okay, some facts are scientific. They are not really questioned. I don't know, the fact of gravity or something. But, you know, you can't argue every fact. But a lot of times, our facts are really the product of something like a survey or a expert opinion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're really facts, historical facts, actual facts about numbers, statistics, that kind of stuff. Yeah, you have to decide if these are facts that we're going to say are true, these are our facts, and they're not merely opinions. And as leader, you can't let someone keep arguing when it's over, when we've reached agreement that this is a fact, right? Yeah. And sometimes people have a real hard time letting go. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of examples. Thank you for all of your participation. And these are really open to discussion and something that needs to be agreed upon or at least respected and go on. Because we talk about empathy a lot in this show. And empathy does not mean agreement. It means understanding. Understanding my foundation, where I'm coming from, which is, I suppose, kind of an Americanism. But it means, and this is a global show, but it means understand why I think these are facts, why I am insistent upon that fact, and why my opinion needs to be respected, but we need to go on. And person cannot accept going on, that's time for a little private leader participant talk, right? Yeah. Because we need to go forward. We can't get so wound around in arguing whether or not this is a fact because we deny and facts that are not in favor of our preconceived notion. We don't accept them. Well, sometimes preconceived notions have to be thought about too, right? Yeah. And that's a leader-participant talk. Usually, people are asking if it usually ends in dismissal from the group. Usually not, because the person that is in denial and refusing to accept the facts and move on, maybe refusing to accept the situation and move on would be more likely. Refusing to accept that we need to go this way at the moment because that we can't do the big leap yet, right? Because people get kind of frustrated because they want to get to the outcome already. But sometimes you can't deny the circumstances, and you need to take a step and not a leap, right? Yeah. And that's hard sometimes for people to accept. And that it's going to take longer than they thought, for example. That's a little discussion to have. And if you do it with empathy and diplomacy, they will not need to be dismissed from the group, no. They will understand that, well, people are saying their expectations were too high. Maybe that's true. That they expected an instant result, a fast conclusion, for something that simply is incapable of having that. Right? Yeah. And sometimes that happens. People think, oh, we're gonna get this done. And it doesn't quite work out that way. Done is hard, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's refusal to accept, it's kind of a denial of fact. Mm-hmm. You know, Sarah and others are talking about, a lot of people are talking about, people think that a belief or a faith or something culturally taught, for example, from childhood, are facts. And they don't want to be disproven. They're in denial that it's not a fact, it's a belief, it's a faith, it's a cultural norm, mm-hmm, that is not shared, maybe, by the other people in the room, and also probably not shared by the outsiders we need to deal with to reach our successful outcome. Yeah. And we can all think of faith that we accept as facts, and we don't want them to be disproven, but we need to have the group dynamic, the leader needs to show us to understand, to have empathy, understanding of other people's faith, beliefs, and culture, and that they regard the foundation of all of those as fact. And we can all keep our facts and move on. Right? Yeah. Because we have to deal. You know, I always say you don't have to be friends. You just have to be willing participants. And we all want the same thing. Right? Yeah. I see that a lot with religious organizations. I must say that because religious organizations tend also to be cultural. Now, not especially if they're kind of regional. And a lot of times, various religious organizations who have truly faith-based facts that are the cornerstone of their belief need to get together and work towards a solution that they all need, right? Some sort of religious freedom solution is what it really is, yeah. Or they have to safeguard. In the United States, we have religious freedom. But, you know, sometimes it needs to be safeguarded. Sometimes there are groups who want to make less freedom for others. Mm-hmm. And they need to be safeguarded against. And we need to get together and do it. I have actually moderated and been the mediator for, I'm going to call it symposiums, because there's all kinds of religious leaders with really different faiths, all regarding their faith as the one, as a factual matter, right? Yeah. But they need to work together for a non-religious problem that they're having, that they need to find a solution, they need to put up a united front. Yeah. And it's an interesting concept because it really shows you that facts are different for different people. And you have to remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of problems do we have with people denying that the facts are not in accord with their preconceived notion. You know, this is a good point. Stephen and others are saying that they bring in unreliable source internet research to bolster the denial. Yeah, you can find anything on the internet if you push a button. You don't even have to look hard. Unreliable source internet research to bolster the denial. Mm-hmm. Well, you fight that with, of course, other research, but it's, yeah, I've seen that. They come in with some sort of a thing, and it's written by someone who shares their views, someone who is truly well-spoken and like that and shares their views, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can choose, you can make facts fit anything, really, if you try hard enough. Mm-hmm. As Janika says, they choose the facts that they want to believe. Yeah. They choose the facts that they want to believe are true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, you can have, it depends how long you want to debate something, right? But you could point to the source and you can, gracious, if it doesn't impact the group, doesn't impact the success, you can graciously decide to accept people's faith as fact and move on. Mm-hmm. If it impacts the group, we have to decide which facts we're going to use, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as James says, and others too, and thank you for all of your participation, there is denial by omission with facts. I left out kind of an interesting chunk that would have changed what we're doing, changed the group opinion, changed consensus. Denial by omission. Yeah, that's why when we do research, when we look for answers, we do it as a team, right? We do it. We might have subcommittees, smaller teams, if it's a very big group, but those are chosen carefully by the leader. And you should never choose a team that is all of like mind, all the same, right? Because they're going to bolster each other's denial and an opinion of facts. Mm-hmm. And you really will get denial by omission and strange research. Yeah. You know what? I'm getting some questions about this reliable source of internet research. Well, some internet entries, I have trouble finding a polite word. Some internet entries, some internet providers, people that write on the internet, are on their face less than reliable, right? They're kind of kooks. But that's not the kind of stuff people bring to the group because they're not kooky. They're not, they just want. They want someone to acknowledge that this could be true too. And then we have to work around it and say, well, you know, that's a good point. But in order to go forward to a successful outcome, we need to have a united front for the outside world. And we understand that's your opinion and what you think. But we need to be practical in our presentation, right? I actually had this once, and I would never name names. It was not even a religious particularly issue, but it had to do with civil rights, I'm going to call it. It had to do with personal freedoms. And there was an issue of what was indeed a religion. You know, in the United States, religions get tax preferences and income preferences and like that. It is financially good to be a recognized religion, 501c3, a recognized charity. It's a big deal. There's a lot of filing. You have to really do it and like that. There's a lot of rules. And not every belief necessarily gets tax favorability, gets validation by the government, so to speak. And we do have freedom of religion. And it was kind of an interesting thing. There's a group of people who are not kooks. They are intelligent. They are well-spoken. They have varying types of real, legitimate, traditional credentials, the kind that go with PhDs and doctorates and traditional schooling and science and stuff like that. Really, and they write books. It really serious on paper and even in person, very, very mainstream, very, very not crazy. And they have a sincere belief that they bolster by showing facts that most cultures regard as God was really an extraterrestrial that came long ago and kind of landed on Earth for a while and then used the inhabitants to build things and stuff, okay? They take historical art and historical and things that actually exist that you can touch, smell, taste, like that, you know, they're written in stone, and they argue persuasively that what you're looking at is a depiction of astronauts, of extraterrestrials, right? Doing things that humans have interpreted as God. Yeah, don't even argue with me about it. That's a statement of fact. And they wanted to have this declared with a religious exemption from the government. I told you it's financially good. It was interesting to see how one person's fact and their conclusion from it, because we draw conclusions from facts, which is why I'm telling you this, was very different from another person's fact and their conclusion. Everybody was well-credentialed. Everybody was sure. Everybody looked at actual physical representational art, for example, and buildings and manuscripts, and they're facts, right? They're in front of you, but the facts were different for the different sides, because they interpreted them differently. Yeah. So facts are to be discussed and decided upon. Yeah. And not denied what your opinion is or what that means. Because maybe everybody's opinion is important, because we have to think about all of that. Because if one of the participants has an opinion about the facts that's different, and we have to go to the outside world to get something done, that opinion is not held only by that person. It has to be taken into account. Yeah. So yeah, it was an interesting exercise. The answer is, people are asking if they got to be a religion. The answer is no. Not so much because of the difference in facts so much, but because they lacked any kind of an infrastructure for like a church. Yeah. Yeah, they couldn't show followers and things like that. It was in its infancy stage. I was brought in because they were having a, let's just say, a rather determined disagreement during the negotiations. I did not follow it after that. I was brought in just to solve an impasse. And it had to do with facts. Yeah, we decided to accept each other's facts and go forward. Uh-huh. So, our next denial, we're getting out short on time. It's denial of consensus. Yeah. Niyoko says that's really the refusal to compromise. And it is. We've reached a consensus that this is what we're going to do. Yeah, we've thought about everything that was presented to us, and we're going to go forward in this way. that does not the way that everybody in the room would have thought to go forward when they walked in the first minute, right? Right. And so consensus might be a vote of the majority that's relatively close. Mm-hmm. And everybody has to get on board to help because we're going to need some help, right? So denial, refusal to accept the compromise. This goes to my talk about we're going to reach consensus, we're going to negotiate, everybody's going to act for the best of the group and go forward, right? Yeah. Yeah. Robert says oftentimes you have refusal to work with the team towards a successful outcome. Refusal to work with the team, denial of consensus, denial of your team, refusal to work with them. You might not need to switch teams, right? Yeah. If you're real integral to the group, as in you can't kind of be dismissed, and you're really not a team player, in fact, you are working against the team, sometimes you have to team with the leader. Mm-hmm, I've done that. I've teamed with someone who no one can work with because I can work with them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes some diplomacy is what it really does. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. A lot of people are saying that when you're the leader, if you take on the disruptive one and you kind of get them to understand, to work together towards the common goal, the common good, as I say in the beginning, it's impressive to the rest of the team, and they remember that you're really good at it. Next time they need to hire somebody. This is true. Uh-huh. What denial of consensus is also denial that the issue has been resolved. Yeah. Sometimes you get it resolved, and people don't want it resolved. They want to keep meeting. They want to keep talking about it. It's over, people. We've done it. Yeah. They need a new issue is what they need. They need something to do. Yeah. You know, sometimes big organizations have that. The disease that they're fighting and raising funds to cure, hallelujah, it gets cured. That's fabulous. But we've got this wonderful organization with great team. Well, let's decide on something else to do because we're really good at it. And there's other ills in the world that we can address. Yeah. March of Dimes had that. Yeah. I've forgotten even what their first disease was, but there became a vaccine for it. Yay, team. Mm-hmm. And now they do child birth defects. They do childhood, essentially infant problems when they're born. Birth defects. I think it's actually called defects now. I don't think it's politically incorrect. But, yeah. So they do infancy. Mm-hmm. And they're wonderful at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Denial that's been resolved. Eric says denial of a legitimate group decision because you're not satisfied. Denial of a legitimate group decision because you're not satisfied. Yeah. That's refusal to work towards the outcome, right? Yeah, the refusal of consensus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Barbara makes a good point that sometimes you have a denial and a refusal to accept the process. They either want to stall it because they're not done yet, but we need to move on, or they're bored and they want to leap forward, but there's nowhere to leap to because we haven't set the foundation yet, right? Yeah. And that's why you explain the process. Sometimes people don't hear it, and they need to be explained again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Travis is saying that when you have denial of consensus, sometimes participants create a splinter group and kind of and break away from the main one. They kind of, well, yeah, I've actually never had that. I guess that happens. Sometimes the group gets too big, and sometimes there are special interests in the group that are not being sufficiently represented. That's a good time for a splinter group, for a group to kind of go sideways and form another group to address their specific issues. Sometimes that happens in big groups. I'll tell you where it happens a lot, and it's considered actually to be a good thing. In Rotary, a lot of times I belong to an extremely big Rotary club. In fact, I believe we're still the biggest in the world. And a lot of times there are special interests within the big group that really aren't getting enough attention because we're doing kind of the big projects. But someone has something that they really want done, and it's not being addressed. And there are, 20 like-minded people. And they make another Rotary Club to give that more, to give the specific emphasis on a specific problem that they want to address. Yeah. And it's a wonderful thing. We just had one split off and make a whole new group of young people. People under the age of 40, which is young for Rotary. And they felt that it was kind of old, the Rotary Club, and it was kind of, catering to tastes for people who were over 50. And so they made a young Rotarian urban club. Yay! It's wonderful. I was just a speaker there. They're great, gaining momentum. And it's bringing more people into Rotary. Yeah, because you have to attract younger people, right? Yeah. So it's great. So a lot of times you might have a splinter group just because they want to delve more deeply into some issue, or they feel that they're not being really represented in leadership, right? Yeah. So that's okay, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Create a splinter group. Bree says that the main thing about denial of consensus is that it disrupts the group dynamic because you need an all hands on deck to go forward. All hands on deck is, of course, it's a nautical term or something. It means we all got to work together, right? Yeah. And that's why we need to get everyone on board with the group decision. With the understanding that we do understand their reservations. And as we go along, they may be quite valid, but we need to go forward. We need to go along. We need to work towards our solution. Yeah. And the last type of denial that we talked about within our context is the consequences of our actions. The denial of the consequences of our actions, right? Yeah. Donald and others are saying that it's when you didn't think through the potential consequences. Didn't think through the potential consequences. Yeah, you got to do scenarios. I am quite big on that because I'm not real fond of surprises. I get surprised a lot. Even when you do scenarios, you get surprised because it might be something you didn't think about. Mm-hmm. Because after all, you're dealing with human beings on the other end, too. And they had their needs, their wants, their perception of the facts, right? Yeah. So then think through the potential consequences. Let's do that. Let's think it through. Let's think through what consequences could be. Think through our response. Think through whether we need to modify our actions. Mm-hmm. To prevent bad consequences. And then we will still have unintended consequences. It's just a rule. Uh-huh. Kim says the unthought through happens. The unthought through happens. Yeah. And then people deny that their actions caused that consequence. Well, my fault was going to happen anyway. No, we have to think about if we do this, this is what we would like to happen, right? That's our goal. But what's the potential consequences? That's not our goal, really, but that could reasonably happen, right? You see this when there's some sort of public works. We can all agree that streets are a mighty fine thing, right? Yeah. And that traffic flow is a mighty fine thing. You want to be able to get from here to there without sitting in traffic stalled for 20 minutes, right? Yeah. And so in big urban cities in the United States, the government messes with traffic flow and one-way streets and making parking and paving things and like that. It's a public works thing. And groups get together and they say, we would like, because it's expensive and you have to kind of petition for it, we need a detour. We need parking. We need something to do with our streets. Group gets together and they make the petition. And they could see it real straightforwardly that the consequence of their petition will be good. They will now have the parking that they want, the on-street parking that they want, right? On-street parking would mean meters for a certain time. You put money into the meter for a certain time. So, well, all right, it's not meters anymore, but you get the idea. It's paid parking. You have to have it designated by the government. We want that so that we can park and go about our business, right? Right. The unforeseen consequences and what we will need to consider so that we don't have denial of the consequences of our actions is that it will impact the people who are already there. It'll impact the businesses. It will impact the residents. It will impact lots of people in ways that we need to think through and not deny, ignore the fact that what we want may have adverse consequences to someone else. Just because we want it doesn't mean that we have to think about the consequences and deny that they exist. Right? Yeah, so you have to think about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Vicky says that the real denial is the denial of our ability to fix the consequences. Right? Yeah. We've had a consequence. We're ignoring it. We're denying that we did it, even though we could fix it. Usually, this comes under the category of pride. Don't wanna. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, until the parties get tremendously entrenched in their views, oftentimes a denial of ability to fix it has to do with a simple apology. Sorry, I didn't think it through. I didn't realize that you would be affected, that my actions had consequences to you. Mm-hmm. And I will fix it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe the apology enough. Maybe the apology is to fix it. People are surprisingly hard to get to apologize. It seems to me that would be quite reasonable. But you have to actually reason with them to do it, to make the apology, and to show that that's really to their benefit, usually, to apologize. Yeah, because they deny that it's their fault. No, you took this action. It caused me harm. It caused me to change my position. Yeah, you can fix this. Simply, oftentimes, without really damaging your position, really, yeah, do it. Fix it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people are saying that you need the team to consider all the possibilities And you might still have unforeseen consequences, but it's not because of stubborn denial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, how can we prevent denial from derailing the process? We've got a few minutes to talk about that. How can we do it? And we've got some consensus here that it has to do with having a strong group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Jermaine and others are talking about trust. Mm-hmm. And no reporting, no tattling, no telling of outsiders, right? Trust that you can say whatever you need to say. Admit that you've got a problem. Admit that you made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Honesty is being one of the other ones, yeah? That you don't have to lie to the group so that we know that this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. Sahar and others are talking about confidentiality. I think that's really important, that it's made clear that what is said within the group, what is done, is confidential. It's not to be blogged about, talked about, Facebooked about, tweeted about, or any of that stuff. It's confidential. We're working on it. Yeah. When we get the pie made, when we've got it all done, then we'll present to the public, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So prevents denial. You don't have to have denial of anything if you're open and honest and confidential. Yeah. Thomas and others are talking about teamwork, right? That we're all in it together, that we can all reach consensus and we can all decide on the facts and on what we're going to do and think about the consequences of our actions, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Puri and other people are talking about conviviality, which has to do, of course, with the atmosphere in the room and also why we have food, because the food is a tool. And usually this is about the time, a lot of times we run over. This is the time when I talk about the recipes and how when things become a little, we could use a timeout for one reason or another. We go and we have something to eat together and allows the leader a private moment, perhaps with a participant, and like that. Yes. My friends, thank you all for being here. We have run out of time. We'll get to the recipes hopefully next week. I know a lot of times we don't, but we have such wonderful discussions and so interesting and so important. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. The prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.